This week on Pop of Culture, we open up the funny pages. We'll ask about the inspiration behind a syndicated comic strip from a local artist.
I made a comic and I shared it with a friend, and he laughed so hard he fell out of his desk, red in the face, tears running down his eyes. It was the first time I felt like someone liked me for who I was and not for what I looked like.
And later, we'll unravel a mystery.
They have taken it into their own hands to gather all the people and items that were in the room where the theft happened at the party.
Coming up,
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Join us at indianapublicradio.org.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. On the show today, we catch up with the next artist to perform at the Muncie Three Trails Music Series, the sensational Barnes Brothers.
And later, we'll talk to a visual artist whose comic strip will be syndicated in newspapers across the nation, starting in September.
But first, something mysterious is going on. And we have somebody in the studio to tell us all about it. Thank you, Bianca Sulanki, for joining us. And listen, full disclosure, I do work with Bianca in the Office of Community Engagement. And we, along with some other folks that Bianca is going to talk about, put this thing on every year. And this year, it is the Great Muncie Mystery. Bianca, tell us all about it.
Yes. So it's the Great Muncie Mystery because we are promoting The Great Gatsby, which will be opening at Muncie Civic Theater in October. But the event itself is September 5th. So it's part of First Thursday. Mm-hmm. And it is my favorite event of the year because I get to, you know, do my day job, my work in community engagement, while also my work at Muncie Civic Theater. So I'm on the board there. Mm-hmm. And I have been working on productions there since I was a Ball State student. So I was a student of the theater and dance department. Mm-hmm. Here. And I graduated in 2015, but in 2014, I did my internship at Muncie Civic. And I worked with Paul Tavianini on Noises Off, and Laura Williamson was in that show. And a few years later, after I graduated, she invited me to come back and start working on things. And so I've done, I want to say this will be my sixth show that I'm working on, which is Book of Will up in the studio. But that connection there between community engagement and Muncie Civic Theater kind of led to me being the perfect person to bridge that gap within the Muncie Mystery event. So I get to write the script and cast the actors and find the props and put it all together. And it has gotten more and more fun each year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is probably, I don't know, we've probably done this maybe a handful of years, and it started kind of with the whole Clue theme. So if you can imagine a mystery Clue game that you figure out downtown, you go to different spots to get clues, and then there's a big reveal. So every year we've been doing that, but every year has a different theme, if you will. We've done Wizard of Oz. What are some other ones that Adam's Family.
Yes.
Last year was great.
We also did a fairy tale themed one to promote Shrek.
That's right.
When we did that.
Yes, yes. And so this year is all about the Roaring Twenties. And so if you could, Bianca, tell us a little bit about the story that people will be immersed in when they play the Muncie Mystery.
Yes, definitely. So we have a lovely actor in our office, Heather Williams, who is playing a servant that worked for Gatsby. Mm-hmm. Was recently fired because there was a theft on their watch during one of Gatsby's parties. And so they have taken it into their own hands. Mm-hmm. To gather all the people and items that were in the room where the theft happened at the party and figure out who it was that stole these these jewels and get Heather's name cleared so that she can get her job back with Gatsby.
I love that. And so we're encouraging people to wear 20s garb, if you will, to really get into the game. And Bianca, what time does it start and what do they need to do to get involved? And tell us about some of those elements of the game.
Yeah, so the game itself will start at 5:30 on September 5th. And there are three different places where you can go to get your crime trackers downtown. So that'll be Cannon Commons, Dave's Alley, and then right under the marquee at Muncie Civic. Mm-hmm. And then the game part will last from 5:30 to 7:30. Yeah. And everyone will need to have their crime trackers turned in at Muncie Civic by 7:30. And there will be some, fun activities and things there to enjoy while you are waiting for the big reveal. There might be some fantastic prizes if you do well.
Awesome. And so the crime tracker basically details like the story, what you just heard about the servant trying to clear her name. You're going to get, here are the suspects and here are the weapons or the items involved in the mystery.
The evidence.
And then evidence, yes. And then new this year, you're actually going to have to solve riddles that will lead you to the place where you're going to pick up a clue. And then once you collect all the clues, you're going to guess who the culprit is. And then that reveal is going to happen at Muncie Civic Theater. And also new this year, a little bit of an after party situation. Am I right?
Yes. So, of course, Roaring Twenties, we had to lean into that and have a little bit of a speakeasy.
Ah, yeah, don't say.
Definitely come participate in the event. If for some reason you can't even make it to that part, show up at Civic at 8. And, we can give you some details for that special little shindig.
That's right. If you're a cool enough guy or gal, you might get the QR code to the speakeasy. Yeah, I love this whole idea. I think it's going to be a blast for the community. Every year, a lot of people show up, entire families, groups of college students, people that live downtown. And I love the fact that everybody kind of comes together and really enjoys traveling to all the different places downtown during First Thursday. And I would be remiss if I did not mention the fact that the clue locations, very important part of the Muncie mystery, because it helps you to interact with a lot of the downtown businesses. Maybe you haven't visited them before. So I love the fact that it gets people inside these businesses for the first time, maybe the 100th time, but but it gets everybody involved and it's a great way to check out some of the new businesses.
Yes.
In fact, downtown. Oh, I might have just given people a clue there.
Uh-oh.
Some of the new businesses downtown as well. So if someone has never participated in the Muncie mystery before, Bianca, what would you tell them to encourage them to come out and enjoy themselves?
I would say that it is a really fun event that's super different.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of events, you know, you're going around to vendor tables and you're picking up your swag and stuff like that. And that's really fun. That's awesome. But this is like a little bit more interactive. You are having to put your thinking cap on. You are, I'm not going to say interviewing the actors. You are listening to what they have to tell you. And you're using the context clues to put those things together and try to solve the mystery. And so it is more involved. And people always tell me afterwards how much fun they have with the thought process behind it and the fact that it isn't the easiest thing in the world. I definitely try to make it easy enough so that, you know, little kids can enjoy and stuff like that too. But I definitely also try to put enough thought into it that the older people will actually have to really, consider the information they've been provided to find the right answer.
Yeah, things aren't going to be really, they're not going to be too obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a mystery and you're going to have to do some sleuthing. That's the whole idea behind it. I love the fact that not only does it bring a lot of the community together, but it takes different partners from the community to make it happen. So not only our office, the Office of Community Engagement, but Ivy Tech Community College is involved. Muncie Downtown Development Partnership is involved. And of course, Muncie Civic Theater. So great community event, a wonderful evening of free fun. So get your glad rags on and join us downtown. One more time, Bianca, when is it and where is it?
September 5th, first Thursday, downtown. The game itself will start at 5:30, and you can get your crime trackers at Cannon Commons, Dave's Alley, or under the Muncie Civic Marquee, and we hope that we get to see you guys there.
Awesome. Wonderful. All right, I'll see you dancing at the speakeasy.
Yes, ma'am.
Bianca Sulanki works in the Office of Community Engagement at Ball State University. They were so amazing, they had to bring them back. The sensational Barnes Brothers are returning as part of the Muncie Three Trails music series. And we have Chris joining us on the line. Chris, thank you so much for joining us to talk a little bit about the concert.
Thank you for having me.
Do you remember when you were here in 21? I know you've probably played a lot of dates, but it was a phenomenal show.
I absolutely do. It was one of our first dates after COVID.
Yes.
Or post-COVID. So, yes, it was a very memorable show. The setting was everything. It was beautiful outside.
Yes.
I love the stage that we performed on. And we actually, I got to bring my sister along. So it was very memorable.
Yeah, it was a great show, which leads me to my next question. Before we kind of get into the history of the group, we have got to cover the fact that I believe the Sensational Barnes Brothers covers just about every genre that exists. Is that solely based on kind of like, these are the things that I have loved growing up, and you just kind of throw it all out there? Tell me why it's important for you to touch so many genres in one of your concerts.
So the type of festivals and concerts that we put on, we love all different types of music. And when we can relate to any crowd that's in front of us, that's definitely a plus. Plus, we love to have fun kind of recreating songs, making them our own. So that's the fun. That's kind of what keeps us going, keeps us in love with music itself.
Yeah. And so we're talking about the Sensational Barnes Brothers, and you do this with your brother, Courtney, but you definitely come from a musical family. Talk a little bit about how music became such a big part of your life, Chris.
So just, again, being born into a musical family, my mom and dad, they sang together all the time. They always took us to, they performed at a lot of weddings. Mm-hmm. So we were there, we were in church. My mom was the youth choir director, and it wasn't, you know, people make fun of us and say we were like the Jacksons. Dad didn't give us spankings because we didn't, but it was very intentional on their part to instill in us this gift. Mm-hmm. My mom saw it at an early age that we had a gift of singing and music. So mm-hmm. she cultivated it along with my father, who played the piano. My mom's a pianist. She teaches piano and voice. So it was almost like we had no choice. My mom was a Raylette. My dad was a recording artist as mm-hmm. well with Jesse Dixon. I don't know if you've heard of the Christian artist Jesse Dixon. But yeah, it was just all around, and we almost had no choice.
Yeah,
basically.
But I'm assuming you enjoyed it, right? Or you wouldn't still be doing it. And when did you decide to do the Sensational Barnes Brothers, to do just the duo with your brother?
So Courtney and I, we had done some background work for a producer named Bruce Watson, who owns a label called Fat Possum. We recorded some backgrounds on Grammy-nominated artist Don Bryant's, his album.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bruce Watson, he bought the High Records catalog, which owns all of Al Green's music, and another catalog called Designer Gospel Records. And he came up with the idea. He said, man, I think it'd be kind of funky if you guys recorded some of this music.
Hmm.
And so Courtney and I, we had already recorded with my brother and sister as a family album. And it was really shot in the dark, just a project. We were just trying to see how it was. And it took about a week to do this album. And lo and behold, people started to bite on this sound. It was a sound of from the 70s, 60s, 70s, yeah, and kind of modernized through the way Courtney and I interpreted the music.
Yeah. What do you like about that particular sound, and why did that stick as far as what you and your brother do together?
This particular sound is, for me, it's just relatable. I think it's a simple sound. It's mm-hmm. not overproduced.
Yeah.
You don't have, you know what I'm saying?
It's, yes.
It's no auto-tune happening yes. in any of it. And I think, well, I know, you know, the message in the music reaches the people. Mm-hmm. It's a very simple message, and it's easy to digest. So I think, I know that's what I love about it. And it takes me back, you know, to a time where life was a bit more simple.
Yeah. Does it take you back to church with the family?
Definitely takes us yeah. to church.
Yeah.
Definitely takes us to church.
And how does it feel when you are in front of a crowd like you were at Cannon Commons for that amazing show in 2021? How does it feel to look out and see, I mean, that is a large congregation of concert goers, right? How does it feel to like bring everybody with you on that ride?
So I'm always skeptical when we get up in front of people, any crowd, large or small, because you never know how people will receive mm-hmm. the music mm-hmm. or the message. And actually, I do better with bigger crowds. You know, somebody's going to catch it. but it was such a beautiful day then. I mean, the weather was perfect. And there was a piece that came over me performing that day. Mm. I don't get nervous or anything, but I'm really anticipating somebody really hearing what we have to say.
Yeah. And how would you kind of in a nutshell, how would you describe that message, that thing, that feeling that you want to get across to people?
Well, the message is, this is a message of hope, mm-hmm. you know, peace.
Yes.
Love. We talk about, you know, some of life circumstances, mm-hmm. you know, that we don't have control over. But a message that leads people and directs people towards the love of God and how he cares for us. That's the message that we train while we're up. And it's not only done through the gospel music. We pull from other genres, R&B, some soul. We've even included some soft rock into our set now. So, but the message still remains.
Yeah. And see, that goes back to my point earlier that you touch on so many different genres, but it's still your vibe. It's still the right. sensational Barnes Brother vibe, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So where are you at right now? Are you on tour? Is it taking you all over the country or where are you at right now?
So actually, I'm in Atlanta right now, mm-hmm. Vacationing a little bit, getting, you know, we just came off the road on the East Coast about 13, 14 days. Mm-hmm. And I took a little vacation nice. For a few days, and we're headed you guys way Saturday.
Yeah.
We're still touring.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So what's next for the Sensational Barnes Brothers? What's next? Well,
we're currently finishing up an album.
Nice.
That we hope to drop late fall at this point. I can't really see it being any sooner than that, but late fall, we hope for a release of either EP. I'm not sure that it'll be a full-length album, but mm-hmm. definitely you'll get 6 to 8 songs on nice. This album of original music.
Great. Oh, looking forward to hearing that. Looking forward to hearing that. And one more question. I know the last time you were here, your sister joined you. What does it feel like to, I know a lot of people say, you know, when you get together and you're part of a band, it becomes family, but you actually perform with family. How special is it for you to get on that stage and look over and see your brother there?
Well, it's actually, it's comforting mm-hmm. because we've been doing it so long. So the thinking part, that element, or it just doesn't exist. And I have my brother on piano, who's the MD. Mm-hmm. So the creativity part that happens when we're trying to figure things out, it's much easier the communication that way. It's challenging as well because mm-hmm. we are our own people. We have our, you know.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Sometimes you know how it is with family. It's all love, but time away does good. You know. But no, it's an amazing feeling. It's a blessing to be able to do this with family and, you know, close friends and the members of the band that aren't blood related. We've become even closer and that bond continues to grow stronger.
Yeah. Well, that definitely comes across on stage and we cannot wait to see you Saturday, August 24th at Cannon Commons as part of the Muncie Three Trails music series. Thank you so much, Chris, for taking time to chat with us.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for having me today.
You bet. The Muncie Three Trails music series with the sensational Barnes Brothers will begin at 7 p.m. Saturday, August 24th at Cannon Commons in downtown Muncie. This is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. We're going to talk comics now.
We are here today with Dion Parson, some people know as Super D. Dion is an artist with Kingdom Comics. He is also an acclaimed Ringo-nominated syndicated newspaper cartoonist, illustrator, animator, educator, and public speaker from Indiana. Welcome, Dion.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. Can you start out by telling us how you got started with art and specifically creating comic strips?
Yes. So I grew up in a town that was known for practicing segregation. Me and my family me and my family were the only black family in the town too. You know, they also had the weekend KKK rallies and they weren't necessarily, you know, the best to us. My dad was a retired Marines and he was working for Red Gold as a truck driver, which is why we were living there. And so I went to school there for my grade school years and, you know, teachers and students weren't necessarily the best to me, but I ended up discovering comics through school. I got into Garfield quite a bit, kind of an obsession. But through Garfield, I learned how to love and appreciate myself through the ways that he was treating other people and was okay with the way he was with himself. Mm-hmm. And through that, I learned how to just, you know, there are certain things about myself that I can't change, so I have to be okay with that. And, you know, through that, I've learned how to do self-love, you know, actually care about myself and the things that who I am. And so from there, I started making comics, you know, based on video games or comic series that I like to read. And one particular moment, I made a comic and I shared it with a friend and he laughed so hard, he fell out of his desk, red in the face, tears running down his eyes. It was the first time I felt like someone liked me for who I was and not for what I looked like. And at that point, it was, you know, I wanted to bring that sort of happiness to other people through comics. And that's kind of how I got my start and how it still makes me continue to move on with making comics.
That's wonderful. I appreciate you sharing that really personal beginning to you, realizing, you know, no one's youer than you, right? And like you can bring joy to other people and heal yourself. Can you tell us a bit about Rosebuds, that particular comic strip?
Yeah, so it's a comic strip about three sisters, Rosa, Maria, and Marcella Gonzalez. And it's just about the daily sibling antics between the three of them, the bonds and rivalries of siblinghood. And the core foundation of the strip is that, you know, even though siblings will get on your nerves, you might want to sell them on the black market or things like that, that at the end of the day, you do love them and you will be there for them.
Well, now, what was your inspiration for these sisters in this? Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, so I'm the middle child of three, and I'm the only male in the family. So I've had quite a lot of experience with that.
Well, I wanted to ask you, How do you create your comic strips? Do you hand draw or?
Yeah. So So what I do in the creative process is I have a couple of sketchbooks that I use or notebooks that I use where I write down ideas and sketch them out, kind of get an idea of what the general idea of the strip will be. And then once I kind of get an idea, then I'll use my iPad to lightly thumbnail the idea out to flesh it out a bit more. And then once I finalize on an idea, I will go on my desktop and actually finalize the strip and get it ready to send out.
Well, so how long have you been working on Rosebuds?
So it's a little complicated answer because I've actually had these characters since high school. Oh. I was developing them around 2008, 2009. And then I put them back a little away because I started working on another comic strip. And then ended up working on another comic strip. But I always wanted to come back to them someday, but never really had the proper opportunity to do so. So then I started in 2020, I just had the random urge to bring them back. I was originally going to do a graphic novel with them. And then as I was trying to flesh out that story for it, I said, you know, let me make some comic strips just to get a general idea of how their characters are and how they properly work. Cause I hadn't worked, you know, done anything with these characters in over 10 years or more. So I just wanted to reintroduce myself through the means of comic strips, since that's what I was most familiar with. And then eventually it just went down to, oh, other people like these comics. And then, oh, Andrews McNeil was interested in the strip. And then, oh, okay, now there's a bidding war with the strip between them and King Features. And then, oh, okay, now King Features is distributing this strip. And so it just kind of got out of hand really quickly. So I'm doing a comic strip with them now.
Well, that's super fascinating to me that you say that you began this when you were in high school, right? You created these characters and then you were away from them for like a decade. How did that feel? Like, what was the reintroduction like?
It was just like meeting back up with old friends you haven't seen in a while. Just like out of the blue, you just get a message from like, hey, it's been a while and you're on my mind. Let's catch back up and see, you know, what's been going on. And you see a lot of the growing up you both have done. And so within Rosebud's case, it was like nothing about their core identities really changed. There were some things to change them to make them more in line with how I as a person have grown and as an artist as well. And so, you know, a lot of stuff has changed on that front, but their core identities haven't changed at all.
Wow. I like that. That's really fascinating. I wanted to know, so you said there was some sort of bidding war. What happened there?
So originally in 2020, Andrews McNeil picked up the strip for their Go Comics website. And then after a couple years in a Ringo Award nomination, King Features expressed interest in this strip. And then eventually there was like a year-long bidding war between the two syndicates, and they're the biggest newspaper syndicates in the nation. And then King Features ultimately won that and are actually doing so many things with the strip. The biggest thing is that they have been selling it to newspapers. And September 1st, it will launch in newspapers across the country in Sunday Comics pages.
Wow. That's very exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been so much fun working with them and working on this strip. And it's one of the things that I've always wanted to do growing up, was like I wanted to see my comic in newspapers. So to finally have that opportunity to see it in newspapers, it's outstanding. Like, I've worked really hard for so many years to get to this point, have gotten a lot of encouragement and mentorships by many legendary cartoonists in the industry, to be able to just, you know, that believe in what I'm doing. So to be able to see that the support has actually, you know, amounted to something has been really nice. And it's been really, really a privilege and an honor.
That's wonderful. Well, now, have you been doing any other cartooning, or you mentioned graphic novel and you mentioned other cartoon strips? Is there anything else that you've been working on, or has the focus been Rosebuds?
So it's kind of been a mix of both. Mm-hmm. The main priority has been Rosebud, since it's the one that a lot of people know me for now, but as well as, you know, the things that are growing with it, it's best to keep focusing on that to properly, you know, incubate that and develop that as it goes. But I've had a couple of other comics I've done in the past. Life with Crommie was my introduction into being a professional cartoonist that I did in 2015. And also have a comic book series called Pen and Ink, which is about two sisters. They're artists and they're just spreading the joy of art between themselves and those around them. I've did a big book with them, and I'm working on doing other stuff with them in the behind the scenes. But at the same time, Rosebuds has been kind of the core project I've been working on at this point.
Well, when you talk about like the idea of spreading joy and art, are you collaborating with anybody? Are you doing anything throughout Anderson or elsewhere?
So I do a lot of comic book workshops throughout Indiana, public speaking, things where I come to schools or universities and I talk to students and kids about what I do, what it means to me to be a cartoonist and an artist, and various other aspects of that. You know, I recently did a comic book workshop with Carmel for their comic book day, which was really fun. But I do stuff like that as a way to give back to the community and to actually be an active supporter of doing cartooning and comic work in Indiana, because there's admittedly not a lot of us that, you know, does stuff like this. And, you know, also with me being the only Black syndicated cartoonist in the state, wow. You know, I feel like I have to kind of be a proper representative of what it means to be an advocate for art.
Yeah, that's really, I don't know, like a privilege and a burden. I don't know. How do you feel about that, being the sole?
I think it's fun.
Okay.
I think because, you know, again, as I said, there's not a lot of people that do stuff like this. There's not a lot of people that are, you know, in terms of cartooning, especially comic strip work, there's not a lot of opportunities to do that sort of thing, let alone to do it in Indiana. So to be able to be someone that actively tries to promote that and encourage others to get into it, it really means a lot to me that people really find that, since, you know, they look to me for that sort of thing. And it's an honor that people continue to support what I do through that. So it's like it invests in itself some sort, where people continue to support what I do, and then I try to give back to the community however I can.
Yeah, that's really important. Well, can you tell everybody where we can find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter and Instagram at SuperDee2. It's SuperDee2. You can find Rosebuds on Comics Kingdom by King Features, which is comicskingdom.com/rosebuds, and in your local paper.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
It's been an honor. Thank you.
Dion Parson, also known as SuperDee, is a comic artist based in Anderson. His comic Rosebuds begins newspaper syndication September 1st.
Labor Day weekend means the Butter Art Fair in Indianapolis, and over the last several weeks, we've spoken to a lot of people that have been involved with this event and Gang Gang, the group that puts it on.
Our colleague Jen Blackmer spoke to artist Rebecca Guyard, whose work will be on display.
I was born in Haiti, so Born in Haiti, immigrant, but grew up in Indianapolis. A little bit about me, a lot of my culture and me being a Black woman and just, yeah, pretty much those aspects really fall into my art. And I love music and movies and color, so that also falls into my art. So going into my art, I am an artist, creative director, and photographer. So a lot of the pictures that are on my website, I creative directed either by myself or with my co-correspondent. Her name is Alexis. We work a lot together, so we creative direct a lot of the shoots. Recently, we've been doing that. So aside from that, I did a lot of the creative direction myself. So I've worked with brands, I've worked with myself, and I've worked with other people just to accumulate and just curate and just create just beautiful, meaningful pieces, whether it's for someone's birthday or for things such as butter, few and far in between. So that's pretty much me.
That's awesome. So you really do seek to transcend disciplines with your art.
Yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned butter. We've been talking about butter a great deal here on Pop of Culture because it's this amazing sort of local multidisciplinary art fair. And I know you have your work on display at mm-hmm. Butter this year. So what does it mean to have an event like that here in Indianapolis?
Well, it's a huge deal. I've gone to Butter 2 years in a row and I fell in love with it. So Butter, in my eyes, just to have my work there, it's a great deal, just a step in my career. Butter is a great platform, especially for Black artists specifically, to shine and build their network. And the fact that they have 100% commission goes to the artist is really great, especially for artists like me starting out and trying to figure out and navigate, find their niche and figure out where in the art world do they fit. So having 100% commission is great. Just the fact of just having my art on this platform is amazing. And I just believe it's a great closing chapter for me. I just moved to Los Angeles, so I believe this is like a great closing chapter in Indianapolis and just how Indy has helped me grow as an artist. And just to be on this major platform is one of the last things is I couldn't ask for anything better.
That's awesome. And you mentioned that this is a wonderful sort of closing chapter because you are, in fact, moving to Los Angeles. So can you take us through your preparations for Butter? What are you actually doing here right now? The segment that we're doing right now is called What Are You Working On? And this is then What Are You Working On? So how are you preparing for your time with this exhibition?
So I actually already moved. I got the news that I was in Butter about April. And I packed up my stuff and moved early June. So preparing for Butter has been a little bit of a challenge because I had to do things 1,000 miles away. But having a team, I have a manager. And like I said earlier, my co-creative director, she also does a lot of our legwork because my manager also lives. He doesn't live in Indy anymore either. So she did a lot of our legwork. She helped bring the pieces to the Stutz building where it'd be held. So preparing for it has been a little bit of a challenge because we had a little bit of production delay. So we had to pivot with that. But honestly, it's just been eye-opening. One, having a team has just helped. It relieved a lot of stress for me, just having somebody that was on the ground and I didn't have to necessarily like fly back home or send anything. And she carefully cared for my art as I would. So having a team and just pivoting has been great. And then just also working on a different time zone and getting adjusted to that. So it's been a bit of a challenge, but it's been a fun challenge because I aim to be bi-coastal. So it was kind of like a precursor to I'm 3 hours behind, but I got to work 3 hours ahead.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty strange. Sometimes it reminds you how fluid time is, actually.
Absolutely. Sometimes I'm like, is time even real?
Yeah, time is an invention, I think. It's an invention that humans have made. And sometimes when you're trying to do art, you're transcending that in really, really unusual ways. You had your first solo exhibition last year. Tell us about what that was like.
Listen here. It was humbling. I'll tell you that. It was very humbling. You know, when you do something for the first time, you never really know what you're getting yourself into. So,
isn't that the truth?
Yes, that experience was great. So Richard, Alexis, and I spent days and hours putting up the show. We were framing each piece. One day it took us 6 hours. Another day it took us 8 hours trying to frame 19 pieces. But it was truly an experience because I self-funded the whole thing with the help of some family members. And the most rewarding part about it is just being able to fully talk about my art, because I've done group shows where I've only had one piece, but having like a whole exhibition, I was able to walk people through it from the beginning to the end and kind of explain like why I set it up the way that I did. And I was able to just connect with everyone. People cried. I was shocked. Oh, like people came up with tears in their eyes saying how much they related to it. And then I was able to sell some pieces. Like I didn't go in thinking I was going to sell anything. I was just like, look, I'm just putting my heart on the line, and however you all receive it is however you all receive it. But I sold over half of my pieces, and then I was able to make some t-shirts with some photos that didn't make the cut, and I was able to sell about 20 t-shirts. So I was really excited just for this to be my first show and to people to still receive it well. I just couldn't ask for anything better.
Congratulations. That sounds wonderful.
Thank you. Additionally,
I mean, you said this, there's this sort of strange paradox, right? When you seek to put something out there that is very much you, right? That's when people respond to it, right? Not that it's trying to be commercially successful, but in fact, it is commercially successful because it is so honest and unique to you. We're coming up near the end of our time together, but talk to us about what we will see with your contribution to Butter. So when we go, and I know that there's a ton of folks in our listening area who will be heading down there, what will they see and how will they be able to find your contributions?
So I have one piece from my show last year, and then I have two brand new pieces that no one has seen. So I'm really excited to showcase that. I tested some things out. I tested new lighting. I tested new ways to color grade. So I'm really excited to show just some growth in my photography and in my art. I honestly don't know where my art is going to be at. So I just say, everyone, just go. And I trust me, you'll know which ones are my pictures. I created a niche for myself, so people know like what my images look like. Just look for some really emotion provoking, colorful pieces that there's color there, but it brings out an emotion. And that is Rebecca's pieces. Like everyone will know, like these are her pieces. So I hope that gives enough detail to the listeners, but I also love the little bit of a mystery of it just to see and hear reactions to seeing my pieces.
So let's get, since you mentioned this, right, we're going to know that it's a Rebecca piece. Can you give us your website, your Instagram? Where can we find out more about your work?
Yes. So my website is RebeccaGaillard@.com. I don't know why I said the at. Sorry. It's Rebecca Gaillard. It's my first and last name. And then my Instagram, everyone's going to chuckle, but it's very me. It's Big Daddy Hazel. That's my Instagram. That's where you can find my information, my email, my website on there as well. If Rebecca Gaillard is a little bit harder to pronounce or to spell out, but those are where you can find me on those two platforms.
Big Daddy Hazel, yeah?
Yeah, it makes me so happy.
And that's what it should do, right?
Yes, it really should.
Hey, Rebecca, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you for sharing what you're working on with us.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, and I'm excited for you all to see my pieces at Butter this year.
Oh, Kara, there are so many great arts and culture opportunities this weekend and beyond. Let's jump right in.
Oh, yeah.
The fifth annual $2 tour of the Village is happening Saturday, August 24th on University Avenue near Ball State University. The outdoor event from 3 to 7 p.m. will include live music from Free Joel and Jerry Barker, more than 50 vendors and community booths, a dunk tank, mechanical bull, a hot pepper eating contest, and so much more. The event is free and open to all, and the first 100 people will receive a $2 bill. Yes, you heard that right, which will come in handy because several of the Village businesses are offering $2 samples and goodie bags.
And the $2 bills are so cool because
it is so cool.
You don't see those.
I know. And they get crisp, brand new ones to hand out. It's really cool. And the corn-fed roller derby, they're the ones that hand it out to everybody on their skates.
Anastasia continues at Muncie Civic Theater this weekend. The show is based on the popular animated film. MuncieCivic.org is the place to go for more info.
Friday night, August 23rd, is the Free Fallen Tom Petty concert experience at Connor Prairie. Then you can get Face to Face, a tribute to Billy Joel and Elton John, there on Saturday night.
The Anderson Gaslight Festival is this weekend in Anderson on historic West 8th Street. Check out historic home tours of Victorian tea, live performances, kids' activities, and more. The full schedule can be found at AndersonGaslightFestival.org.
The exhibit Beginnings, the Foundation's student show, is on display at the Ned and Gloria Greiner Art Gallery just off the atrium food court in the Arts and Journalism Building at Ball State. The exhibit showcases art made in the first year Foundation's classes utilizing a variety of media. It's free and open to the public.
Looking for some blues? The good kind, of course. The Robert Cray Band is Saturday night, August 24th at the Paramount Theater in Anderson.
And next weekend, as we mentioned, is Butter in downtown Indianapolis. Created just 3 years ago by a group called Gang Gang, led by a Ball State alum, Chirp Chirp, Butter invites guests to see and experience contemporary art in new ways, all while advocating for the value and worth of Black artists. 100% of artwork sales goes back to the artists. Butter, which offers lots to see and do over the Labor Day holiday weekend, is held at the Stutz Factory Building in downtown Indy. More info at butterartfair.com.
If you have a cool event you want Pop of Culture listeners to know about, tell us at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Join us at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, who thought comic strip was something completely different, and was hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Kara Duquette. Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the campus of Ball State University.